This is the podcast from JNS Pediatrics. Hello and welcome. I'm Natalie Pinchem, and I will be reading synopses of three articles published on January 9th, 2015. The topics of the articles featured in this podcast are craniosynostosis, tethered cord syndrome, and vascular disorders. The incidence of raised intracranial pressure in non-syndromic sagittal craniosynostosis following primary surgery by Gregory Thomas and colleagues. In this study, the authors investigated the occurrence of raised intracranial pressure following corrective surgery for non-syndromic isolated sagittal craniosynostosis in 217 children. The medical records of these children who had undergone their primary surgery under the care of the Oxford Craniofacial Unit between 1995 and 2010 and remained in follow-up were reviewed. Overall, the rate of raised intracranial pressure following surgery was 6.9%, occurring at a mean of 51 months after surgery. Raised intracranial pressure was significantly more common in those 89 patients treated with modified sagittal strip craniectomy, accounting for 14.6%, than those who had a calvarial remodeling procedure, in whom it occurred in only 1.6%. Raised intracranial pressure was also more frequent in younger patients. However, as younger patients underwent modified strip craniectomy, while older patients had calvarial remodeling, there was a strong correlation between procedure type and age at operation. This difference prevented the authors from determining whether age or procedure had the most significant impact on the occurrence of later raised intracranial pressure. No other factor investigated was found to have a significant effect. Disparities in clinical and economic outcomes in children and adolescents following surgery for tethered cord syndrome in the United States by Faris Shweke and co-authors. In this paper, the authors report on more than 7,000 patients with tethered cord syndrome who were surgically treated in the United States between 2000 and 2009. The majority of patients were female Caucasian children treated at children's hospitals. The prevalence of surgically treated cases increased during this time period from approximately 20% to 30% of the cohort. This finding is indicative of an increasing preference among both patients and their neurosurgeons for surgical intervention for tethered cord syndrome. The authors report on interesting postoperative outcomes in this large study. There was a trend for increased non-routine discharges, complications, length of stay, and hospital costs. Furthermore, this trend remained even when adjusting for confounding comorbidities. Therefore, the authors suggest that earlier surgical intervention for pediatric patients with tethered cord syndrome is highly beneficial. Additionally, older children may have a different form of the condition, such as a more advanced type or a distinctive pathophysiology, which sparks future exploration of this compelling data. It also begs the question of why such a finding exists and, more importantly, brings awareness of its presence to surgeons, specialists, and the healthcare system in its entirety. Mechanical thrombectomy for pediatric stroke arising from atrial myxoma, a case report by Rafael Vega and co-workers. Pediatric stroke is an uncommon occurrence. Although rare, acute ischemic stroke is known to be associated with significant morbidity and mortality in children. The etiology of stroke in the pediatric population differs from that in adults, because pediatric stroke is often related to congenital disease, such as atrial myxoma, or to trauma, as opposed to acquired cardiovascular complications. The authors group at the Virginia Commonwealth University believes that children experiencing severe neurological deficit due to acute ischemic stroke may benefit from endovascular intervention. In this article, the use of mechanical thrombectomy is described in the treatment of embolic occlusion secondary to an atrial myxoma in a pediatric patient. This case involved an 11-year-old boy with a history notable for Raynaud's syndrome and a distal extremity rash. He presented to the emergency room with dense hemiparesis secondary to thromboembolic occlusion of the M1 segment of the middle cerebral artery. Following mechanical thrombectomy, the patient's pediatric National Institutes of Health stroke scale score improved from a 16 to a 7. He has continued to improve. As a result, this case provides support for acute mechanical thrombectomy as a safe and effective treatment for occlusive stroke caused by emboli from pediatric atrial myxoma, and thrombectomy should be considered as a first-line therapy. Thank you for listening. JNSPG podcast content is contained in the AANS iTunes U site. Sign up in iTunes for JNSPG and AANS podcasts and videos. Content is updated continuously. Comments on this podcast can be sent to jnspodcast@thejns.org.